And we kill anywhere from 100 to 300 head of hogs. And as Fred said, though, we didn't go by the moon when we got ready to kill them. We killed them when feed began to give out. And every one of those hogs was killed and washed and put in a barrel. Just as a hog was killed and cut up, he was thrown over in a pile. And that meat was put, a layer of salt was put in the bottom of that barrel. And a layer of meat with the skin side up. It could be a ham, it could be a joel, or it could be a whatever. And then just fill that up. You put a layer of meat and a layer of salt, layer of meat and a layer of salt. And that meat would keep all the year, you know, hot or anything, you know. And when these people would go to the commissary to buy their meat, why, they would have to take what was on top of the barrel. They couldn't pick around if they wanted a ham and just pick it out. They had to take whatever it was. If it was a joel, why, that's what he carried home. And then we had, extra to that, we had what we call dry salt meat, old dry sides. Most of y'all call it fatback, I believe. Now, and Daddy wouldn't let us cut off the end of the side. The first man that got a piece of meat, he's the one got that slab, we call it. And I have seen him come to the commissary to get the groceries and everybody look over that meat box. And nobody hadn't cut that meat box. They'd stand there, you know, waiting for John to get started. And he'd wait for Henry to get started. And the first man that got his cut of meat, well, then the other one would get what was left right on down to the, when he got to the last part, if he wanted a pound of meat or 5 pounds of meat, he took what was left. And we didn't have no scraps or nothing like that. And I'd like to see Mr. Mercer do his meat that way now in his store.
Tell them about why the company store always was the highest store in the county, because some of the people was leaving and you had to charge about three prices for your stuff to make up that feller at least.
That's so too, but it was a kind of an unwritten law that when one man left to go to another place, and it was bad along them days because we didn't have this welfare checks, and everybody stays put now. Every January, December and January and February, when I was coming up, you could just meet trucks after trucks, you know, people moving and wagons and hauling people from one ten-time place to another, one farm. But they don't do that anymore because they missed a check whenever it comes now.
Why did they do it then?
They'd get dissatisfied working with us, and they'd hunt a new boss man. And then this boss man that he was going to, he'd send us a check for what he owed, you know. And it was almost, to tell you the truth, just like they used to be in slavery time, really. That's just exactly what it was.
You hit the nail on the head, too,
yeah,
right?
That's what it was.
They just worked for what they ate.
Not only for the people that worked for us, too. When before Lurleen and I married, the Tentine people were considered kind of wealthy people. But Hoover come along and kind of knocked the blocks out from under everything, you know. And Lurleen and I had a good Model A brand new Ford Roadster. And it had that chrome, when chrome first come out, you know, it had chrome all over. That's the prettiest thing I ever saw in my life. And we could get 3 gallons of gasoline a week. And we didn't jump in that car every time we wanted to run to the store. I jumped on a horse. We sent somebody, you know, and we used that car. We went to the doctor with it, or we went to church on Sunday with it. Three gallons of gasoline
a
day. And I have seen the time in Hoover's days that we couldn't pay off our labels. We'd go for 12 months at a time that we couldn't pay not 1 5-cent in money. But we would furnish them. The people that was furnishing us would give us all the groceries and the overalls and the blue shamrock shirts and things that we wanted for our hands. But we didn't have any money, no money at all. And a lot of our hands would buy groceries out of the store. We had plenty of groceries. We had plenty of groceries and a plenty of doctor.
Such as it was.
And we took care of them that way, but no money. And these boys would swap our groceries for a little cash money, a little eggs and things like that that they could buy around. It was really tough. It was tough not only for us, but for the people that worked for us. And Lillian and I lived in Georgia a while, and we shipped our naval stores on the river, on the steamboat over there. And that was some of the best eating I think I've ever had in my life. I'd go down there and eat with old Captain, what was his name? Whatever his name was, and he just feed me the best stuff. You know, we just have old dried beans.
And this
and
was
things.
On the steamboat?
Yeah, mm-hmm. On the steamboat.
And that you call it where?
Was this was on the Apalachicola River?
Yeah, right across the river from Butler's Ferry, right down there. Right, that's where we live, right in Fairchild over there. Mm-hmm. And
you were talking about Hoover's days, telling the saying that old Percy had about.
Percy? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as Fred said that a while ago, you can learn something from these black folks. And I was around them about all my life, and if you listen to them, you could learn a lot of things, too. And Percy Highsmith, Fred probably knows him. He come up there one day and didn't have any money to pay him off, and he wanted to get his groceries. And I had bought some goats and had them out there in a little patch. And he come in, he says, well, says, I want my money today. I said, Percy, what's the matter? What's happened? He said, well, sir, said, you know, Mr. Butler down there, he had got a hold of a bunch of goats and he went broke. Said, Mr. Perry Mooneyham said he got a bunch of goats and he died pretty quick. And said, I see you got a bunch of goats out here now. And said, I want my money. So a little later on then, when Hoover was running for president, Percy says, everybody told me to vote for Mr. Hoover, said he was going to put the nigger up with the white man. And he said, and bless God, said he put the white man back with the nigger.
Well, but the other thing that's interesting there, did many of them vote?
No.
Did many of those black people actually
not
vote?
Not many, but a few of them did, all that wanted to. Gladys, all that wanted to did vote. There wasn't, I have seen a time or two when there was a few turned back.
If they paid the poll tax.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was still the time.
And it all that stuff that people have heard about not letting black folks do this and do something else was a whole lot of untruth.
Yeah, it was exaggerated.
Because I know a lot of them that owned land, and nobody never tried to take that land away from them. Always was nice to them. And I have always been good to black folks. They're black folks and all like that, but there's some good folks and black folks, and then there's some sorry
there's
things
some real
too,
good
you
black
know.
Friends.
Getting back to your turpentine there, I'd love to say.
Huh?
Getting back to your turpentine business there. You know, when we used to go down to Mr. Johnny Rooks' still down in St. Creek and get this drove that they skimmed off the turpentine.
To make fires.
Make fires. And we had a standing order with Mr. Johnny to bring us a gallon of turpentine every month. See, we went in business, furniture business, secondhand furniture business 47 years ago. And back then, bed bugs and chinches was rampant. And we had to take that turpentine and corrosive supplement and doctor these matches to kill his chinches. And we get a gallon of his turpentine every month.
My daddy thought that turpentine was one of the best medicines there is, and I really believe it had greater potentialities than it was ever done anything about it. But it's good for disinfectant, and it's good for a sore. It's good for a bruise. It's good for arthritis. And it's just good for most anything that you want to use it for, and we used it too.
Clean your bathtub with it.
My daddy thought that 666 and 10 time, you couldn't navigate unless you had it. That's all.
Now, that's why, and the 666 signs were so, they were just, that was one of the commercials that was just everywhere. Or the commercials for that particular phone.
If you had a sore toe or the sore throat, 666 was good for it.
Well, we worked this 10 time right on up until the mill, the paper mill at Panama City come in, and they began to cut the timber. People needed money. They didn't have any money. And as Fred will tell you, we could pay, or did tell you, we could pay a man for a piece of timber in 5 years. He would get his money back, exactly what the paper company would give him if he cut it down. And then in 5 years, after we got through with it, you could go back and do that same thing again 5 years. And you could do that for 15 years, and you'd get as much money out of that every 5 years as you would cutting it down for pulpwood.
Whereas when you cut it down, it's gone forever.
And when you cut it down, it was gone forever. And at that time, there wasn't very much planting going on, in fact, no planting, and like it is now. If we hadn't known that when I was a little boy and known how to plant pine trees, why, we'd have been filthy rich. There ain't no way in the world to kept us from, we wouldn't have nowhere to put our money. We couldn't have put it all in one pot.
Mr. McMullen,
but we didn't know it.
I wanted to ask you something, and you too, Mr. Williams. One thing I've heard in other turpentining areas is that people used to cook potatoes in turpentine, in boiling,
rosin.
The rosin. What's the difference?
That was never done very much. It was done a little bit, but not.
They didn't do it here.
No, they didn't. They did it some, but not
is just,
not very
that's
much.
That's just the hottest stuff in the world, and when it's just still liquid.
I saw a black man. We took him down on those Chiefs Pond one night fishing with us, and we was gonna let him do our cooking and coffee making and so on while we messed around. And I saw Red do this way, I didn't notice him directly. He done this way again. I said, Red, what you doing? He says, I'm keeping that coffee from boiling over. And every time that coffee would boil up, we were making it in a syrup bucket, Every time that coffee would boil right up to the top, Red would do this way. Coffee just shut away right back down. And if you don't believe it, you try it. Keep coming in a syrup bucket and rub it and see if it don't stop.
Well,
it won't boil.
Where are you getting turpentine? Huh? They don't do this turpentine business down. Where did they get turpentine?
Out of stumps. These stumps, you see them hauling these lighter stumps?
Is that right?
Now?
Yeah.
They are producing a lot of it out of pulpwood.
Stumps and pulpwood.
Most of it is coming out of pulpwood.
They don't chip it now like they used to.
No. There's nobody. There's one big company, I believe they call them Nelio, that's in South Florida somewhere. They're still doing it a little bit. But 10 time I sold it for $8 and $10 a barrel, and it'll bring, $150 now?
I imagine.
$150 a barrel now.
Well, but now do these pulpwood companies, like the big ones in Panama City, in different areas, do they get the turpentine from the pulpwood after it's carried to the
right.
plant?
From the paper mill. That's a byproduct.
They force it out.
All right.
They get it. That's a byproduct that they have, but they can't get rosin. Now, the rosin, I don't know whether you ladies know it or not, but most all the base
makeup
is made from rosin, 10-time rosin that comes off of these trees.
I didn't know that.
A byproduct.
I mean, it's natural, right?
Yeah. You see these baseball pitchers are pitching and reach down and get a little bag and hold.
That's rosin.
Yeah. That's what you got.
And you see these fiddlers that rub something on the strings. That's rosin. Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's amazing. All
I think that just about covers everything except this thing right here I wanted to show you. This is a tobacco cutter, and this is a third of a plug of brown mule chewing tobacco.
And can you still buy it?
Can you I've cut $500,000 worth of tobacco with this thing. They had come in the store and wanted a dime worth of tobacco. That was 10 cents worth of brown mule tobacco. And if they, of course, wanted a nickel worth, well, we cut that in two for them, too. And tobacco used to come in caddis. It, not like it is today. I think that Bull chews is comes in a package. And he don't chew the plug no more, do you, Bo?
Red man.
That's kind of old. Carry that around and smell it. And
smell like tobacco.
It is. But that's all I can say. It's old tobacco.
And this little sack of tobacco here was started in Hoover's days, whenever they got to where they couldn't buy cigarettes, and Prince Albert was got to where it was pretty high, and this cost 10 cents. Mm-hmm. And that was called Country Gentleman. It's a cigarette tobacco, and there's your leaves that went with it, that you rolled your own cigarettes out of.
They call that Hoover dust.
Yeah, Hoover dust, right.
Sure, that's not some of that funny tobacco now.
Old fella used to drive the wagon for us was stingy, and it was hard times too, and he didn't want to give any cigarettes away. And he got some horse manure and put it in one bag, and he smoked out of the Country Gentleman bag. You know, when anybody stopped and asked him, say, Jody, give me a cigarette, he'd always pull out the his horse manure tobacco. And of course, he'd pull it in there, and they never know the difference. All the old Country Gentlemen and stuff was all about the same thing.
During the war, World War II, I was in college in Los Angeles, and you couldn't get cigarettes very much,
yeah.
You know. And they got some in at the campus shop, which none of us knew what they were. They were white, and they had brown letters on them, and they were called Picayunes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I remember.
And we took them over to the sweet shop and got a Coca-Cola, and I lit that cigarette and almost lost my breakfast.
Yes, sir.
And I took the Picayunes, and I put them in an old gold pack. And every time I'd light a cigarette, some leech would come up and say, can I have a cigarette? You know what I gave him. And you never saw it.
Big Hune was a strong, strong cigarette. I think that just about covers everything except this now. In my day, we didn't have this Scotch tape and stuff to fix up packages. This was set on a store counter, and this string was pulled out. There's a ball of string in there to tie up your packages with. And if some of it that hung from the ceiling, Mr. Hand, you probably have seen some of that.
You had one, but you didn't bring it.
Yeah. Hmm?
You had.
I had one of those that hung up mm-hmm. in the ceiling, but I didn't bring it with me.
You didn't show them your.
And this in the fall of the year was a thing that you used to get what gum was accumulated on the trees. We kind of felt like that was money in the bank.
Well, you mean you scraped down that which had not dripped off of the cut.
And that's where you got your dross.
Is that right?
That's where you got your dross from. And it was pulled off, and this was kept real sharp, and it would shave off some of your tree. And each charge that was turned out had three strainings to it. The first one, you got that good dross that you made fires out of it. And the next one was a little coarser stuff. And then the next one was drained through cotton batten and a fine copper bar. And then you got all of this stuff through that cotton batten that you could get through. And then you, if there's any left up on it, you rolled it up in little bundles and threw it over in the barrel. And that was used for gunpowder and stuff like that, Fred. And
now, wait a minute. Which part was used for gunpowder? The part that dripped through, or the one that was in the cloth?
The one that was in the cloth. The old tin time part that clung to the cotton bagging. The strainer, see. It wasn't cotton bagging. It was
batting. I heard the word.
Yeah.
I heard the word.
He misunderstood.
Yeah. But now that was used for what? For gunpowder?
Procter & Gamble bought most of that stuff that I know of. They was main buyers, and they used it. They sent part of it for gunpowder and stuff like that.
Good, I didn't know about that.
Some of it was even used in soap.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah. Oh, and this is a vinegar pump. Now you don't ever see any vinegar in barrels. It's all in bottles and jugs and things. And when I was a boy, they didn't know what a jug was. Mama sends you to the store to get vinegar. This was in the barrel, and it's always was made out of wood because your metal would canker, you know, and they'd pump you out a quarter vinegar or a gallon of vinegar, just whatever one you wanted. I'm real proud of that because there are not many of them in the country.
I never heard of that one.
Well,
I think that just about takes care of it. Before I get home, I can think of 1,000 things that I offer to you.
Before we stop, are there any questions for either Mr. McMullen or Mr. Williams that anybody's thought of that they'd like to ask? Total silence.
I'm going to tell you one other thing. I don't know. I wish I knew how many thousand of people that my family, my father, and us worked up until now. And I've never seen my daddy get a warrant for anybody. And I've never seen the sheriff come on his place for anything. And he always took care of all that himself. If the sheriff needed one of the men that was on our place down there, he called Papa, got him word, old John done so and so, and we need him. Papa would bring him to him. And then if he could, he'd sign his bond, carry him right back, and put him right back to work. Possibly never tried or nothing like that, you know. And old Judge Tires, I know most of y'all know Judge Tires, was Justice of the Peace down here, and I just have to tell this. He was had a constable and a Justice of Peace down there where we lived, and they just picked on our hands. Every Saturday night, you know, they just sit and wait for them to get them because they knew we'd pay them out. So we got to where we just go down there and pay old Judge, you know, to throw the thing out. The old constable, he'd get them, and we just kept old Judge on the payroll, give him about $25-$30 a week. And every Monday morning, we'd have Justice Peace Court, and Judge would throw it out. And it just had it to do.
Justice.
But them days are gone forever. You don't have that no more. You can't work that. You get in jail quick now, you know, trying to go around and tell the judge what to do, but paying him off a little bit.
Mr. Mike, would you want to tell him about the man that got shot that you told me about on the barrel one time?
Oh, about my daddy?
Yes, sir.
Well, I won't call any names in this thing, but Major Wester, y'all probably know him. Dad is the one that got killed. Somebody had stole a bunch of spirits of tin time from us. We was in Georgia. And they rolled it down and rolled it in bateaus, what we call regular rowboats. Brought it on this side of the river, and they trailed it, you know, and saw where it was rolled up the hill, drug up the hill. And my daddy and Mr. Wester was in there hunting it one morning. And Mr. Wester had started work with us that day. He just got a job with us. And he says, Mr. Mack, says, you Papa said, Mr. Weston said, you go on down and look, and said, I'll sit on this barrel and keep somebody from moving it before we get back. He said, I tell you what to do, says, you familiar with this swamp, says, you let me sit on it, and you go on down there. Papa said, well, all right, if you want to do that, all right. But during the meantime, two people had been standing out there watching them that had stole this 10 ton to start with, a black man and a white man. And when Papa first sat down on the barrel, a black man got a bead on him with a gun. And while Mr. Wester and Papa was arguing about who was going to sit on the barrel, the black man decided he couldn't kill him. He couldn't kill Major Wester. You probably know Major Wester.
Yeah.
And then when they changed guns or changed positions, they didn't know Papa and Mr. Wester had changed places. And Mr.
White man.
Shot Mr. West instead of Papa. And Papa had just walked off about 4 or 5 steps from it. And then he run off and went to Columbus, Georgia, which was 5,000 miles from home then, and about 6 months' journey. And he stayed gone for about a year and come back and pled guilty to it, and they gave him about 3 months. And that's all it was to it. And I saw Papa come in one day with his shirt cut right across him. And a black man had struck at him with one of these hacks, and believe me, these are sharp. And it just cut his shirt right across there. I never even grained the skin at all. And I saw him go down in the quarters one night to stop a fight. And a black woman hit at him with an axe, and he had on a Mackinaw coat, and that axe hit him right between the shoulders and split that coat down and didn't grain the skin.
Your father was a lucky man.
He was really lucky. Now that's true. But there were some bad folks in Tim Time, white and black, not just the black people. They were bad.
It was a hard life, too.
Yeah. And they was just a real low class of uneducated people, you know. And I'll tell you one more thing, and then I'm going to quit. As this old woman said on the film there about the baptizing, and she was singing, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, once a year at Blue Springs, they had a big baptizing, what we call a nigger baptizing. And Fred, you remember it. And it was my job up until about the time I married, for me to get a truckload of our hands, you know, and carry them to them. And all of them in the community that had joined the church during that time was all baptized on that particular Sunday. And all of them would have a spiel made up whenever they come out of that water. To say, you know, and they'd come out just
shouting and singing.
Praying and singing and hollering, you know, and swinging. And old Sims, he was one of the worst black folks I ever saw in my life. And we call him Two-Headed Sims. He'd been hit on the head so much till I saw a nigga hit him one time with it and bent a pipe, inch and a half pipe on his head, and never even knocked him down. But anyway, Sims got religion, join the church, you know, and it was felt my duty to carry old Sims to the baptizing. I said, Sim, what you gonna say? He said, oh, Lord, said, I got everything already said. And he said, the Lord is doing my talking, and he said, all I got to do is just get in the water and it just wash my sins right away, you know. And the little old Sims out there in that water is just like ice, as y'all know. And he got Sims in there and ducked him down and brought him up. And he said, holy goddamn. I thought I would die. That thing like tickled me to death. He had forgot everything that he was going to say, you know.
I wanted to prove him.
Well, on that note.
I knew that would wind it up. That would bring it to the end, wouldn't it?
I want to thank all you folks for coming. If I can catch my breath here. Water's cold. And first of all, I want to be sure that you all got one of these white packets and be sure and take it home with you. It has some materials about folk culture in the state and some things that you might be able to use in other ways. A directory of where materials on local history and folk culture are around the state, including here. And a little booklet called Folk Life and Fieldwork, which if any of you get inspired to go talk to some old maiden aunt or something like that, and you want to know types of questions you could ask that would make her start telling you stories and legends and jokes and riddles and things that she remembers from the past, this book might help you. The Library of Congress puts it out. One thing I need to have back from you before you go is an evaluation form, which is in the white packet. And Miss Milton, you're an old hand at all of it. But if you could take that out and fill it out before you leave, that would really be very nice. The NEH